Good luck, everybody, and a good Erev Yontif. It's one of those occasions where we make Havdalah one night and Kiddush the next night. It comes up sometimes. And once again, thank everyone for coming. And it's Erev Yontif. As I mentioned this morning, for some reason, the art said it's always Erev Yontif. It just comes out that way. But so I know it's a busy time, and I'll try not to keep people too long. Brief presentation, a siyum on Yerushalmi Maseches Maisos. I know that some of the email I would be Kurim. That was last year. Not that I remembered. but this year I did Maisos. Maseches Maisos is a Masechta, which is in Seder Zroim, of course, dealing with agricultural matters. And it's really a very much an agricultural Masechta. There's no Bavli on Maisos, of course. There's no Bavli on any of Zroim other than Brochas. We have Yerushalmi and all the Masechtas in Zroim. And the Maseches Maisos is very, very agricultural oriented. And more so, there's very little that's not talking about agriculture. I'll just look, Art School gives a nice Hakdama to some of the issues related to Maseches Maisos. And I had this chus when I worked for Art School, actually working on this Masechta. So I get a shout out in there. But basically, we know that there are a number of things that a farmer has to do with produce before he can eat it himself, after his crops grow and so on. So first, of course, is truma. That's a different masechta, trumas. But after he gives truma, roughly according to the Torah, he can give only a little bit amount, a tiny drop, and that covers everything. Chito achas, poteres is kol akri. But the chachamim fixed an amount to have to give for truma. Roughly, the average person, 1/50th, 2%. Of your crop. That's for truma to the kohen of your choice, your friendly neighborhood kohen. You can give it to whoever you like. You have what's called a tovus hanot, to give it to whatever kohen you choose. Then, after you've given the 2% of the crop to the kohen, so you have to give 10% of whatever's left, after you took off the 2% for the kohen, then you give, that's called maaser, or sometimes called maaser rishon, 1/10, to the levi. The levi gets more, but then the levi also has to give a percentage of his, what he gets, to the kohen. So it all works out. That's called Meiser Mina Meiser, or Trumas Meiser, that the Levi has to give to the Kohen also, 10% of what he gets. But getting back to the regular Yisrael farmer, so he gives 2% to the Kohen, then he has to give 10% of what's left to the Levi. That's Meiser, and that's what this Masechta is about, Maseches Maisos. And then there's a second 10% that he has to take. And what he has to do with that depends on what year it is in the 7-year Shemitah cycle. This year we're just finishing now a Shemitah year, Tavshin Pei Beis, reserved to the Shemitah. In the Shemitah year, you don't have to do any of these things because everybody has equal rights to everything in the field and so on. But in years 1 through 6, so if it's years 1, 2, 4, and 5, from that second 10%, after you gave 2% to the Kohen, 10% to Levi, you take a second 10% and you don't have to give it to anybody. But you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. You have to bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it there. If the Torah says, if it's too much of a schlep to bring it to Yerushalayim, it's in Parshas Re'eh, we're laying it on Shmini Atzeres, you have the opportunity to be poded, you take the monetary worth of it, and you bring the money to Yerushalayim, you have to spend it on food. That's called Maaser Sheni. There's a Masechta called Maaser Sheni, another Masechta in Zroim, with those details. In years 3 and 6 of the cycle, that's in years 1, 2, and 4, and 5. Year 3 and 6, you give that second 10% Maaser Ani. So that's the idea. Now, until Truma is taken off, the food, the produce, is not kosher. You're not allowed to eat it. It's called Tevel. You're not allowed to eat it. But there's some discussion exactly what's included, or rice, or all fruits, or vegetables, and so on. We assume, at least on a Drabana level, anything edible, don't have my focus about it, but anything edible is subject to these, when it comes in the field, is subject to these, to all of these dinim. Basically, in order to qualify something which requires a truma, which requires trumas and mice and so on, has to be a food, or something which is edible. So things that grow in the field, grass or whatever else, those kinds of things are not subject to any of these dinim. And I mean edible to a human being. Animals can eat grass, obviously, and hay, and these things are so edible to a human being. Okay, fit for human consumption under ordinary circumstances. It has to be something which is owned as opposed to something which is hefker. Fields that are hefker, under no ownership, stuff blew there, grew, whatever it was, that's not subject to these dinim. And again, it has to do with called gidulei karka, with all the stuff that comes out of the ground. So those are some of the principles. And again, these principles are discussed here in this Masechta. At a certain point, at what point do you have to give the maaser? So there are two things, there are two stages called gemar melacha and rias penei abayis. Gemar melacha is when you've done, everything is completed in terms of the harvesting process. You learn this Masechta, and a lot of attention is devoted to what the gemar melacha is for different fruits and vegetables. all kinds of different rules. I mean, I don't know too much about about agricultural practice. I'm not sure how things are done today at all, but it's very interesting to read. You know, a whole list and discussions in the Mishnah and the Gemara about how this fruit and this produce is considered finished at this point. The other one's considered finished at a different point. It's not all the same. It's not a constant rule because the different things are done with different things. So it's interesting to see. And then as Rias Pnei Abayis, and you bring it into the house, right? You bring the stuff into the house, that shows that you're, you know, basically you're finished with it. Now, once you separate a truma, so you're allowed to eat the produce, even though you didn't do maisa yet, but you're only allowed to do what's called achilas arai, kind of a casual snack eating. So some of this is discussed as well. So that's what the other sift is about. As I said, there's a lot of information about different types of fruits and vegetables, how they grow, and when their process is done, and how the farmer, what he does with it, and so on. You can get to see a little bit about agriculture, including some fruits and vegetables, which I don't even know what they are. And I don't know what they are in English. It's almost not familiar to us. But obviously at that time, that was an agricultural-based economy. So that's what everybody takes, understands. Okay, so I just want to, before it's finished in the Sikhla, look at one passage which relates a little bit to Yonah Diyoma, not to Rosh Hashanah, but to Sukkot, which is also, of course, just a couple of weeks away. The Mishnah says, I mean, this is in the Perek Aleph in Halacha Gimel, so the Mishnah talk is called Esrog Haboser. Esrog Haboser basically means, and Haboser is an unusual word, but it means basically unripe. Okay, it's a very early stage of the development of the fruit. The early stage of the fruit development is called Esrog, it's called Boser. Okay, that's an early stage of development of the fruit. So it says that, Rabbi Kiva says in the Mishnah, Esrog Haboser, Rabbi Kiva Omer Eino Pri. That's not called a fruit, okay? Rabbi Kiva is not called a fruit, and therefore he's talking there. You cannot use it as an esrog for sukkahs. That's the context. You can't use an esrog for sukkahs. Okay, and the chachamim disagree. All right, that's in terms of the arbaminim. Okay, you know, the esrog, which is a boast at an early stage of development, you pluck it off the tree. You know, an esrog actually grows. You know, just as a side point. You know, the when we wave the esrog, we wave a little bit of esrog, so the pitum is facing upwards. Most of the time, when you see an esrog about to be plucked, the pitum is down. Okay, and the question is, why do we hold it up? You have to hold it upright. You're not yotzi. In fact, that's the practice that we have. We make the bracha. The whole problem that the Tosfos discusses, when you take the loven esrog, so we know when you make a bracha, you're always supposed to make a bracha before the performance of the mitzvah. Over lasiyosam. Make the bracha before, not long time before, right before. The problem is, the loven esrog, technically speaking, as soon as you pick it up, you fulfill the mitzvah. Midagbe heinofakbe, the Gemara says. So you pick up the loven esrog, you're going to make the bracha. Like you just picked it up, guess what? You yotze. Okay, it's true, you didn't wave it yet, you didn't do the anum, but as soon as you pick it up, you yotze. So therefore, that's the practice, we pick it up upside down. A lot of people think that's some kind of a Kabbalistic thing, you hold it upside down, and nothing to do with that. Okay, we hold it in a way that you're not yotze. You hold it upside down, so you're not yotze, and you say the bracha, and you turn around, and then you yotze. That's what we do. But the esrog grows, when you see esrog, I've seen esrog, and sometimes in Eretz Yisrael, an orchard, you know, they're down, but that's because of the weight of the esrog. When it comes out of the bush, it's actually the pitum is up. Then eventually, because of the weight, it kind of falls down. But the natural way it grows is upwards. Anyway, if you pluck it at an earlier stage, so the Kiva says, you're not yotze. So the Gemara kind of wants to relate that to our Mishnah, because the Mishnah says, in our Mishnah, Reb Shimon, and that's Reb Shimon Yochai, it's not Reb Shimon, it's Reb Shimon Yochai, was a Talmud Reb Kiva. Remember that Gemara that at the end of Gemara Yevamos, that says that after Reb Kiva lost all of the Talmidim, during the period of the Sirus Omer, you know, so many of his Talmidim died, and then he found some other students. Among the other students were Reb Shimon Yochai. So the Gemara suggests Reb Shimon in the Mishnah, okay, seems to be following Rabbi Kiva, because in the Mishnah, Reb Shimon says that for purposes of Maisers and Chumas and Maisers, when Esrog Haboser is not considered a fruit either. So Gemara says, oh, same sort. Like Gemara says, Asir Reb Shimon Beshita Reb Kiva Rabo, right? Just like Rabbi Kiva said with regards to Sukkis, that an Esrog Haboser, Esrog at this very early stage of the fruit development, is not considered a pre for the purpose of Abaminim. So it's also not called a pre for the purpose of the Trumas and Maisers. But then the Gemara challenges that. So Rabbi Yossi, Kol Shu Bosel Lo Chayv Maisers. Okay, is that true that just because something which is not considered a fruit, the purpose is there a link like that? Is it the rule or the definition of pre the same? Gemara says Hare Haminumar. Okay. An esrog which is spotted. An esrog, you know, sometimes you see esrog got all kinds of spots on it. An esrog which is spotted is not considered acceptable for arbaminim, but yet, you know, we certainly call the pre for the purpose of Trumas and Maisers. You see, Aram and Numar, Okay? And various other examples, more as Hari Pasalulu, it can't be used to the Arbaminin, Esek Hananuma, spotted Esek, striped or spotted, you know, the speckles on it. You can't use it for the Arbaminin, but it is considered a pre for the purpose of Trumas Amisus. So, you know, the Gemara questions, is it the same din? Is there a link or not? So the Gemara says, Mistabra, Reb Shimon, Yod de la Bekiva. Reb Shimon will agree with the Bekiva. Reb Shimon says that, in other words, Reb Shimon will say, and Reb Kiva, lo Yod de la Bekiva. Reb Shimon, Yod de la Bekiva. Reb Shimon will agree with Reb Kiva that an Esek HaBoser is not valid for, an Esek HaBoser is no good for the Arba Minim, because it's not called a Pri, okay, and it's not called a Pri, you know, because let's remember that the Pusuk for Esek Pri eats other. It's called the Pri. I mean, it's got to be something which qualifies a Pri. That's the phrase in the Torah. Pri eats other. Okay? It says in the Pasuk Pri. And this is not considered to be a Pri. Okay? But so Shimon would have to be Moda to Bekiva. I would have no choice, so to speak, but to be Moda to Bekiva on that point. Okay? In other words, if it's, you know, but in the other direction, Gemara says that Bekiva, lo yod of Shimon. Bekiva does not necessarily agree with Shimon. Because after all, a menumer, like we said before, spotted esrog is puzzle for lulu, but yet it's a chayev for you know in trumas amisus. And there's some suggestion that Rabbi Akiva might disagree. He would not automatically, he would not consider boser for the purpose of considered a boser esrog a pre for the purpose of arba minim, but he would consider it a pre possibly against Reb Shimon. He would consider it a pre for trumas amisus. Why? Because it's still edible. It's still a food. By Trumas and Maisus, there's no pustik that says pre. By Esek, it says pre, so it's got to be pre et other. So Bekiva says that Esek HaBoser, the early stage, a very unripe Esek, is not going to be called a pre, but since it can still be eaten, okay, some people still eat it, would not qualify as, you know, in terms of, it would not qualify in terms of Arba Minim, but it would qualify for Trumas and Maisus, and therefore he doesn't necessarily agree with Reb Shimon on that end. So it's Lav Dafka that Reb Shimon, the Talmud of Bekiva, is following his Rebbe in this regard. There is another possibility. Okay, that you know, maybe that an esrog is a different issue. The reason we could call it a pre. Maybe even a Bekiva would agree that it is called a pre. It is called a pre. Abos is still called a pre. Like I said, it's edible, so it is. What is it? It's a fruit. So why is it a problem when it comes to arba minim? Not because of pre, but because of hadar. The phrase is pre eats hadar. It has to be beautiful. It has to be something that someone looks at and it's impressive. Look, you see an esrog which is full of spots, so it's not beautiful. Okay, again, there's no such din for Trumas HaMaisus. The fruit has to be attractive looking. So maybe that's why he disagrees. And Shimon may consider, Rabbi Akiva notes, he would agree that it's called a pre, and it's called a pre for esrog, and it's called a pre for Trumas HaMaisus. Therefore, you have to take Trumas HaMaisus, called a pre. And it should be good for, what do you call it? It should be good for Arba Minim also. The reason not good for Arba Minim is because it lacks Hadar. So those are different ways. The Gemara did mention, although if you look in the commentary there, the principal commentary on the Yerushalmi is the Pnei Moshe. Pnei Moshe. It's the only commentary that we have that's on the entire Yerushalmi from beginning to end. Okay, there are other commentaries from different commentaries we don't have. The only one we have on the entire Yerushalmi cover to cover is the Pnei Moshe. So he gives this suggestion, Rabbi Fulda, Mara Fulda gives the other explanations, or different dinim, or different approaches as to how we can figure out whether, at the end of the day, whether Bekiva fundamentally agrees with Shimon. The Gemara dismissed it, okay, that says it's not necessarily the case. And we had a couple of explanations as to why Bekiva might hold that with regards to an esrog for Arba Minim, you would not, an esrog HaBoser, this unripe esrog, would not qualify for an esrog for Arba Minim, but it would qualify for the requirement of Trumas HaMaisus, either because he says it's not called a pre. Okay, it's enough for Trumas HaMaisus, but it is a food, so therefore it grows in the ground, it's a fruit, it's a food, so it's not called a pre, therefore it doesn't qualify for pre-eats hadar, or he can even agree that it's called a pre, but maybe hold a pre-eats hadar, it has to be something beautiful, something attractive. So just want to share again, take the opportunity to come in, I thank everyone for coming, I know it's hectic, Erev Yontif, just one other thought, which I think is something that my mother, Aleha Shalom, would appreciate. This is actually, believe it or not, the 25th yard site. Rina Bas Rav Yitzchak, she passed away Erev Rosh Hashanah. Erev Rosh Hashanah was a Wednesday, so it was a Wednesday afternoon. There wasn't enough time to have the Kura before Yontif, so we had a 3-day Yontif, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Kura wasn't until Sunday. It was quite a, you know, challenging experience, you know, for us and the family and for friends as well. But I think she would appreciate this Vart. The Chassam Sofer, they printed, I think, probably Not probably. I'm sure they have better editions now than the one I have over here. In the back of the end of the Tshuvas of the Sam Sofer, at the end of the Tshuvas, they print his Chidushim and Lulav HaGozel. By now they probably print it separately with footnotes and, you know, all the Sfarim that I have are written in the Rashi script, you know, and now everything is written much more nicely with footnotes. And I once made a commitment. I didn't necessarily honor it, but I made a commitment when I started to reprint Sfarim. I'm not going to buy Sfarim that I already have just because it's a nicer print, you know, and they have footnotes. So the first time I broke that was with the Minchas Chinuch. Those who are familiar, it's a different work altogether. It's just not the same work. I mean, the Minchas Chinuch, you know, that I got for my bar mitzvah, you know, pages and pages, not even a period. It's all one sentence. My father, Olam Shalom, taught English in YU for many years. So when he wanted to explain to the Talmidim what a run-on sentence is, he would sometimes go to the Minchas Chinuch. But now they printed, it's already old, but they printed with paragraphs. It's a whole different work. And I opened up all the Rashi Tevas, the different work. So I broke it with that. And then I got the Ritva, because it has all the footnotes and the new tour. All right, I still have a lot of things that I didn't get the new Sam Sofer. Anyway, the Sam Sofer and his commentary on Lulav HaGozel. Mentioned the very thing. I think my mother Hashem would appreciate this. He's talking about Esrog HaMenumah. He's talking about this spotted Esrog. So he says, you know, we can't relate to this, although I'll show in a second we can relate to a little bit. He says, you know, in the olden days in Europe, not that long ago, not everybody had an Esrog. It was almost impossible, very, very difficult to get an Esrog. I said somewhat tongue-in-cheek that I think the average 10-year-old today had probably seen a better Esrog than the Vilna Gaon held. You know, you just couldn't get them in Europe, you know, it was already winter time, and, you know, and you couldn't get things, and there were all kinds of rules, you know, about what you could import from elsewhere, and, you know, it was not, sometimes, typically, one community that had a little of an Esrog, and everybody, you know, used the same little, passed it around, right? They were cone it the first day, whatever it was, whatever they do, and that's what they had in the communities. And now, Baruch Hashem, you know, little of an Esrog are available, and we all have them. I remember as a kid here, even in B'nai Yishun, you know, I grew up here in Teaneck, and not everybody had a little of an Esrog. Many people had. We always got it. I used to go with my father to the Lower East Side in those days. That's where you'd go if you lived around here. But, you know, they would have like four or five esrogim on the bima, a little bit of esrog set on the bima. We pause before Hallel. You can ask your father, grandmother, I don't remember. And people would go, not everybody had. Today, everybody has, every kid has. Okay, Baruch Hashem, they're available, and so on. Okay, but so the Sam Sofer in this passage here discusses, you know, after you passed it around to 20 people, it's, if you're holding it, it's a sweat, if it turns brown, you know, where people held it and it becomes spotted. And that issue per se is not relevant to us, we all have our own. But the truth of the matter is, I caution people sometimes to pay attention, you know, if you, by the third or fourth day, a chalamoid, you know, your own little Vanessa, because you've been holding it every day. So I always am conscious to keep my hand kind of moving, you know, when I'm not waving them. You know, I move the esrog around from different places, so my hand and my fingers are not always in the same place. And that usually works. Can't promise it's always going to work, but it usually works. And you know, it's a problem. So the Sam Sofer was asked, by the time, I don't know, the 10th or the 15th guy used it, isn't it a problem of esrog hamenumah, like a spotted esrog? So he writes, he says, the yevshe kol pam near esrog, but also all the places and so on are not going to be clean. So isn't it a problem with esrog hamenumah, right? So he answered, I think, as I say, my mother, Hashem, would have appreciated this answer. He said, Sam Sofer says, Adarabba, the reason Esrog HaMenumah is no good, because it's not beautiful, right? It lacks beauty. Sam Sofer says, what do you mean? Since it was used by so many Jews, he says, Nirali da Havi Hodr, Kevan Shabo Ayidei Mitzvah, so Zeu Hodr Hadro. Adarabba, that's a beautiful Esrog. It was used by so many people for the bracha, for the mitzvah. That's not just an issue of the physical beauty. Okay, there's a spiritual beauty. So many Jews made a bracha over this esrog. Wow, you know, that's the most beautiful esrog you can come up with. Right? That's what Sam Sofer says to justify that it would not be a puzzle esrog hamenumah. It's hadar from a different perspective. So I thought that, and again, I think my mother, Lashom, you know, used to sometimes be frustrated with you know, perhaps she thought sometimes the halacha is very rigid and so on, and she wants to always be inclusive of other people, and let's, you know, bring in other people and make people comfortable as possibly as we can when it comes to doing mitzvahs, you know, bring in more people and get other people to do it, and, you know, sometimes, well, it's not exactly right, okay, you know, but her attitude was, I think she would identify. No, she would identify with this comment of Chassam Sofer, right? That's him. That, no, so many Jews made a bracha on this. Wow, what a beautiful esrog. You know, it looks unattractive. In general, just as a side point, this will finish. I'll just read the last line of the Masechta. But you know, in general, hiddur mitzvah, and this is a shmuz shir by itself, which I don't want to take people's time for now on Erev Yontif. But hiddur mitzvah is not only a matter of physical beauty; it's also a matter of your attitude towards the mitzvah. The sugya, the principal sugya of hiddur mitzvah, when it comes to the cheftish mitzvah in Shabbos, Nafkuf Lamed Gimel, talks about a beautiful esrog and a beautiful talis and a beautiful film. I think one version, not in the Gemara, quotes a beautiful shofar. You know, that's a, you know, that's hiddur. But we see from Rishonim already that they felt that hiddur applies to a person's attitude towards the mitzvah also. The famous Gemara in the beginning of the 10th parak of Pesachim, in Arvei Pesachim, it says, Arminik not to eat a big meal on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Arvei Pesachim is halachamichu, the first mission in Arvei Pesachim. It says you're not supposed to eat a big meal on Erev Pesach in the afternoon, so you'll have an appetite for the matzah. Yeah. You know, you have a good appetite, huh?
Yeah,
right, potato, you eat potato and you have a potato. It's a Rashi and the Rashbam, both on the page in Sadi Tesson Beis in Pesachim. Both say because of hiddur mitzvah. What do you mean? How do you have hiddur mitzvah matzah? Should it be perfectly round or perfectly square? You know, no, it's got nothing to do with the physical. It's your attitude towards the mitzvah. If you're hungry and you'll eat the matzah, if you're stuffed full and you can barely eat the matzah, think about the afikoman, right? if you barely can get it in your mouth, that's not the beautiful way of doing the mitzvah. So it has to do not only with the chetzah shel mitzvah, your attitude towards the mitzvah. And that's what the Chassam Sofer says over here. And I think, as I say, my mother also would have appreciated that approach, that it can be considered an esrog amenuah, it can be considered kosher because it was used adarabah. That's a hadr, zehu hadr of a hadr. He says it's a beautiful, beautiful idea. Just read the last line. I'll say the hadrim and invite everybody to make a bracha again. The mishmas, my mother, Rina Bas Rav Yitzchak, on this 25th for Yard Sin. Okay, let's find the end over here. The five prakim in the sechta. This is the park park hay halacha gimel. So the Mishnah says the Mishnah talks about a certain type of aloof, lamed vav fei, not aloof like some of those, but a loof. Okay, so it's a type of some type of plant, and so on. What exactly the plant is, we don't exactly know what it means. So the Gemara says, "Kaini masnis." The Mishnah is talking about zera silion shel aloof. Okay. Which is some kind of a seed of this wild loof. All right, anyway, whatever exactly it is, I said before, there's some things we don't even know what they're referring to. But the question, you can have a seed, which as a seed was edible, okay, but once you plant it, and whatever grows is not really edible. We're talking about human consumption. Animals can eat it, but as I said at the outset, that chumas and mice is only from produce, which is edible for human beings. So here the question is, you have the seed, and when it's the status of a seed, it's kind of soft or whatever, so it's edible. I don't know who eats it, but people do eat seeds, you know. Apparently these seeds were eaten, but what the seed grows into when it's planted is not subject to them. So the Gemara says as follows: Chado Isa, there was a certain woman, Havale Yerbuzin de Chuma Go Kaposa. She had some type of a chuma, some kind of plant or something in her hat, in her basket, okay, and Naflin Leginsa Vetzamkun, and these seeds fell out of her basket or whatever she was carrying it in, and they planted. And the question is, are these new plants considered subject to chumas and maises, and therefore forbidden to anybody who's not a kohen? So also over the kumar Yochanan Ushara, Rabbi Yochanan permitted. He says not a problem. You can eat it. Even a non kohen can eat it. Omer Bchir Bavo below Masnisin. He said that's exactly what our Mishnah said. Sha'afal pisha avian truma, even though in this case the father, so to speak, the progenitor, right, the seed which produced the fruit, is afal pisha avian truma. Okay, but hare elu yochel, right, the same case in the Mishnah, the plants that grow from that seed can be eaten even by non-kohen, not subject to truma. So that's what this Chir Bar Va said to Rabbi Yochanan. Your thing is written in the Mishnah. So he said, Amalei, Bavloi, okay, man de galus lechaspa ashkeras marganisa. Okay, I showed you, yeah, because I explained to you how the Mishnah works. Basically, we're saying to him, I know it's a Mishnah, and I'm explaining to you how the Mishnah works. You know, that I found, so to speak, the pearl in the pottery, so to speak. We have to say, is it not a mission? I mean, of course it's a mission. I know it's a mission. And that's exactly what I'm explaining. So that's how the Masechta ends. Say the Hadron.
Thank you again for coming. Please take some cake and some juice and some fruits outside. And I wish everybody a good adventure.
Amen.